It's episode 230, that's 230, of the Kaiju Podcast. Welcome, everybody. I am your host, Chad O'Brien, and with me today, only one person today, but Jason Gibson is here.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. He's saying it twice to make up for the fact that Chris Charlton is not with us this week.
Correct, correct.
Correct, correct. You can stop that anytime now.
Okay, now, okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
All right. Now you're channeling your inner Matthew McConaughey. anyway, today is April 1st. And you know what that means.
It means we get $1 million. No.
It's a day to lie to all of your friends and then make them feel like assholes for believing you when it was really a joke. A quote-unquote joke, whatever you said.
Yeah.
Pranks
are fun.
That's right. I'm dead. No, I'm not.
Got you.
I got divorced. No, I didn't.
I killed your wife. Well, that's right. Maybe. No, I didn't.
In the video game world, this has also permeated to developers and publishers releasing various information of dubious veracity.
Yeah, the fucking liars.
That's right, yes. Sometimes it's very obvious, it's patently obvious, and I can kind of forgive them for just kind of, I don't know, releasing, like, sometimes the things they do involve really elaborate, like, art or videos, or, you know, just something interesting to look at. But other times it can be like a real, like, moment of, what are you doing? This sounds like, you know, why would you lie about this? So of course the perennial favorite, Valve doesn't do this obviously, but, you know, the various leaks, quote unquote leaks, come out saying that, you know, Half-Life 3 has been confirmed and,
at this point, aren't you the fool if you ever believe that, though?
I guess. I don't know. There's even a comic that goes around all about this where Valve actually does announce on April 1st, here's Half-Life 3, and everybody says, you know, bullshit. You guys are idiots. You guys are jackasses. And it cuts back to, like, Gabe Newell and the rest of the team. And he goes, okay, cancel the project. I guess nobody wants it. in a Boy Who Cried Wolf kind of situation.
Well, you know, if they ever do announce Half-Life 3, they really ought to do it on April Fool's Day and be completely serious and then have that actually happen.
I suppose. But Half-Life 3 is never going to happen.
No.
Yeah. I still remember there was an Indiegogo campaign run by some guy who just wanted to drive a van around Valve headquarters with, like, bullhorns basically constantly saying, when is Half-Life 3 coming out? I don't think it was successful. I hope not. Anyway... So a couple of companies have, of course, gotten in on this. A lot of it these days is something that's kind of in-game. So, like, in Overwatch, not on consoles, but in Overwatch on PC, if you're playing Reinhardt and you type something into chat, they'll append one of Reinhardt's lines, like, for honor, or... you know, justice and things like that. But some of them were more elaborate. Square Enix released a trailer for Final Fantasy Tactics Alexander.
Nice.
Yep. And that was, that's obviously Alexander has to do with Final Fantasy 14. I don't, I don't know if they actually said it was April Fool's or anything like that, but I did go to the YouTube video itself, and comments were disabled. So maybe some people were upset about this.
Maybe, because I would love a new tactics game.
Yeah, I'm sure many would. Other things we had were Nintendo got in on this as well. They even created a homepage for Fire Emblem Battle of Revolution, which was...
What?
Yeah, it was going to have 8-bit graphics.
Okay.
Not even 16, 8-bit graphics. And it was going to have something to do with Hanafuda, or they were going to release Hanafuda cards with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, at least that's obvious.
I mean, yeah, sort of. I don't know. But other companies take a more lighthearted approach, like we said, where they just release something kind of funny just to brighten up your day. So I think the biggest one that I've seen so far, April Fool's, for those who don't know, we are recording at night in Japan, but April Fool's is just starting in the States. So could be all kinds of, you know, new stuff after we record. But Google has changed, or not changed, but they've made a new mode for their maps where you can change it to Ms. Pac-Man, and it will go based on, like, the actual streets. So choose a place with lots of streets. You don't want to get caught in a cul-de-sac.
Mm-hmm. Japan's pretty good for that.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yep. I once read like a thing about like city planning when it came to Japan, and it turns out like, I mean, I don't know how true that is, for a lot of cities, but, many cities used to be like actual fortresses, or like, you know, they were around fortresses and castles, because there were all kinds of feudal lords and all that kind of stuff. But, the roads were intentionally, like, loopy, and they led to dead ends and stuff like that, because if you were an invading force, you wouldn't know which way to go.
Fair play.
Right. Whereas, you know, obviously if you're the defender, you live in the town, you know which way to go to, like, cut off the enemy and stuff like that. Mm. But, which is why a lot of cities that did not have those fortresses, they kind of have the more grid-like structure.
Yeah, like Sapporo, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, Sapporo's like a perfect grid. It's amazing.
Oh, I love Sapporo. It's awesome. It's so good.
Yeah. Whereas if you go to Hiroshima or something like that, you'll get lost.
Yeah, and the streets are about 3 feet wide.
Yep.
Everywhere.
Yep. Same for things like Kyoto and Osaka. And, yeah. All the major cities formed around these castles and fortresses. So, like I said, I'm not sure exactly how true it is, but I can easily see that being the case.
Makes sense. Yeah. It makes sense.
Yep. And yeah, so that's April Fool's. Like I said, April Fool's developments are still coming out because, I believe in the States it's somewhere around, it's early morning. It's like 9 in the morning. Whereas it's after 10 here. After 10. Which means April Fool's is almost over. Ah, thank goodness. although it also.
Well, it's not that big here, really.
True, but at the same time, the two big ones I mentioned were Square Enix and Nintendo. But
also true.
Yeah, although we have to be kind of extra cautious because we have to worry for like another day. All of April 2nd for us is actually April 1st in the States, so until like again late at night. Yeah, don't get caught. Don't get caught. Well, there's with the end of the month, or the changing of the month from the 31st to the 1st, we mark a new fiscal year. So kind of last year we talked about, or not last year, last week we talked about what's coming out or what's not coming out, really.
Right, yeah.
For the next few months. But yeah, business is a-changin'. And one of those changes is that Palmer Luckey, founder of the Oculus, is no longer going to be with Facebook.
A good riddance, really, honestly. That guy's a dick.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it goes with the old adage, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And
hasn't that guy been a dick forever, though?
I mean, like, forever is relative. I mean, he's barely 20, so...
Well, okay, but like as long as he's been in the public eye, he's been a douchebag.
Right? I guess, but he's had money for quite a while, so
that's true.
Yeah. So there's that. But right, Facebook and Palmer Luckey are parting ways. Now, this is pretty much like brand new information. So Palmer hasn't really gone on record. In fact, he's been kind of laying low ever since the whole situation during the election, where it came out that he was basically funding this troll company that was making anti-Hillary messages. Right. Palmer himself was being quite a douche, and it's pretty obvious that Facebook told him to sit down and shut up until, I don't know, maybe he was on a yearly contract or something like that, and now that year is up, kind of.
Maybe he got sick of holding it in. He's going to let it out.
So, that's right. He's going to start up his own super PAC. Yeah. Trump VR.
A virtual view of Trump's forehead.
That's right.
Live streaming 365.
Or from Trump's forehead. They'll just attach a camera there, and then yeah, 360-degree camera. Right. So, he's no longer with the company. Again, this is new. Facebook hasn't even said whether this is mutual, like a mutual agreement where Palmer decided he wanted to leave. All we know is that they're parting ways.
But knowing Palmer Luckey and his history, you can imagine details will be coming out pretty shortly.
Right.
Right?
It depends. It could be like Kojima, where, you know, NDAs were signed, and so we don't know what was going on then. I honestly doubt this is the last we'll see of Palmer Luckey, because he is a man of some intelligence, and he is related to fields that we're connected to, gaming.
It's true.
And again, as I mentioned before, he's super young. He's 24, and he's already valued at like $750 million. So he's probably not...
Yeah. He may be a douchebag, but he's a rich motherfucking douchebag.
Yep. I mean, I don't know. Maybe he'll be like Notch from Minecraft and just take all his money, buy a huge house, and occasionally make a terrible tweet that brings him back into the public light, and then and then go back into his hermitage again. But that's Palmer Luckey. And speaking of people and obscurity, let's talk about soccer.
Okay,
Obscure to us Americans, right?
Right. Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I mean, the club team in Kansas City is getting kind of popular. They got a nice stadium, but I don't know much about it.
I see. Are you a fan at all?
No, I find it incredibly boring, to be honest.
I personally love soccer, but not enough that I actively follow my teams. So I like Bayern München, or I like Barcelona, but I don't actually watch all of their games. I just see how they're doing.
Well, wait, you like Barcelona? So does that mean you're a Patriots fan?
No,
because they're the equivalent of the Patriots, right? They're like that.
I mean, you know, I just like how they play the game. It doesn't really matter to me, like, the people involved or any kind of team politics or anything like that.
Okay.
Like I said, I don't follow it that closely. Barcelona is actually in the heart of this because Diego Maradona is suing Konami over what he claims to be unauthorized use of his likeness. And this is extremely uncommon for a sports game, because if there's anyone who takes special care to make sure they have all the licenses they need, it's any company that's doing a sports game.
Well, yeah.
Now, this gets kind of murky in NCAA, where basically the players just don't have the rights to their own likeness. And to be fair, they don't have the rights to their own likeness in a sports club as well, but, it's a bit different. Anyway, Konami makes, Pro Evolution Soccer, also known as PES, and in, PES 2017, there's going to be a kind of legendary player kind of mode where you can choose people from the past, and one of them is Diego Maradona, and he is the top rated star of all time, which is, you know, it's debatable, Maradona or Pele or someone like that. Maradona, for soccer fans, is well known for the Hand of God incident, where he touched a ball, clearly touched a ball, and it went in a goal, and he was not called on it, and he later said that basically God made him put his hand there.
Okay.
Yeah. And anyway, so Maradona is still active. He's a soccer coach now. He's suing the company for using his likeness, but the problem is, his likeness is very likely. Yeah, eh? Likeness is likely.
Yeah, I see what you did there. Still, and I wasn't impressed.
Still held by his old club, which, going back to what I said earlier, is Barcelona. He's played for a number of clubs over his career, but Barcelona's probably the one that stands out the most, and probably that's the team that's going to be associated with him. So they probably still have legal use of his likeness, but he disagrees.
Well, I mean, I guess that's up to an individual to decide. Well, maybe it's not. I mean, I guess maybe there is some...
Not for athletes. No,
I suppose. But I suppose it's in his contract, you know? I guess.
Well, I mean, again, it's... I believe there's something under thing where it's in perpetuity or something like that. Specifically to allow for this kind of case... you know, all sports have it. WWE has it, and NFL has it, and all kinds of things. Yeah, so there's that. I doubt Konami will be in any real trouble, either legal or financial, as a result of this.
Probably not.
Yeah, but you know who is in financial trouble, Jason?
Me.
You?
Yeah, I could use some money.
Oh, come on. It's not like you have two children.
Maybe.
What I was going to say is Mad Cats.
Yeah, those guys too. They could use some money. Well, they could have used some money.
What is Mad Cats, Jason?
It's,
for people who don't know.
It's classically speaking, because they don't do it anymore. Yeah. They used to make peripherals for games like controllers and joysticks and fighting arcade boxes and stuff like that, like Razer or Logitech, Logic Cool in Japan. And most of it was kind of if I remember correctly, it was middle of the road quality. It wasn't the crap you could buy at Walmart, but it wasn't Razer quality stuff.
Although I don't know, their fighting sticks have consistently been used at like tournament level.
Well, fair enough. But like when I remember them in the mid-90s, mid to late 90s, they were making like the auto button Super Nintendo controllers.
Yeah.
Where you could like rapid fire and turbo and stuff like that.
For me, it was the controllers. Controllers were generally Mad Catz. Sticks were typically Logitech for me.
Yeah.
For my flight sims, back when I was playing those. But it seems that they are no longer making money. And you know what happens to businesses that don't make money? They don't exist anymore.
They get shut down.
That's right. So Mad Catz has actually been in operation for 28 years. They almost made it to the big 3-0, but they have just filed for bankruptcy in both the U.S. and Canada. This is... for people who haven't been following the story, this has been a long time coming, because just sales have been on a total decline.
I can't remember the last time I saw a physical Mad Catz anything.
Mm.
Like, really, I don't remember.
Yeah, they tried, like, one last desperate push. By banding together with Harmonix to co-publish Rock Band 4. But Rock Band 4 was not a heavy mover.
That trend sort of blew itself out around 2005, I think.
Yeah. I'm not even sure they made the peripherals for Rock Band 4. But they might have. In either case, yeah, the game didn't sell, their peripherals stopped selling, and, they eventually had to let, like, one third of their staff go, and then, just last week they were delisted from, the stock exchange, because their shares were, like, less than a nickel a piece.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah. I mean, you can still be a public company without being on the stock exchange or the New York Stock Exchange. You'll just be, I don't know. You'll
be on the New Jersey Stock Exchange, the Hoboken Stock Exchange.
Wow. The New York Stock Exchange does have standards, and apparently being 4 cents a share is beneath those standards. So they're gone. Apparently all employees have just been completely locked out of their account and told to go home.
You gotta wonder, is this gonna be one of those like insolvency things where they completely just like go away, or are they gonna be like reformed and like come back again?
Is the demand for peripherals really that big anymore?
Well, but it could be like something like where Razer or Logitech like buys out what remains of the company and sort of like just like assimilates it into their structure or something.
I didn't mean to sound so dismissive, because absolutely with esports, like professional computer gaming is higher than ever, obviously, and that involves a lot of keyboards and joysticks and controller pads. Most of that is, yeah, like you said, Razer, and Logitech now. Those are the big boys. But, Mad Catz was one of the big boys, and they're gone now. So,
it's the end of an era.
And that's basically all the real news for this week. Not a whole lot. But
some things happened.
Yep.
More than we can say for last week.
That's true. Yeah. Some things did happen. And this week we have quite a few games to cover, or at least I do. I have quite a few games to cover.
I have like half a game.
Half a game.
It's not even a game. DLC.
Yeah. Yeah, and half a DLC.
Half a DLC. Was that like three-tenths of a game?
Maybe. That's right. But at least it's a good one.
Yeah.
So I've been playing some pretty challenging games this week. I've been put to the test a lot.
Well, so. What's the hardest one you've been playing this week, Jed?
The hardest. Even that's difficult to come up with.
The one that's caused you the most stress.
They're all hard in different ways, and they have all caused me stress in different ways. So I'm just gonna go in alphabetical order. And I'll save the biggest game for last. It's not that difficult, but yeah. Okay. So I'll go in alphabetical order. We'll start with H. H as in has been heroes. Has been heroes.
I actually was kind of interested in that.
As was I. So, for one, it was one of the few titles coming to the Switch. Having finished Legend of Zelda, I was looking for something else to do, so I ended up getting this, and, as well as the third game I'll talk about, again, alphabetical. So, so Has Been Heroes, developed by Frozen Byte, the guys who made Trine. I've never played it myself, but I hear really good things about it.
I played the first one, and then I tried to play the second one, and I said, this is exactly the same game. So I stopped playing the second one. But the first one was really good. It was. It was kind of like puzzles solving, and you had like three characters, but you could only play one at a time. You had to switch back and forth between them. It was good.
Yeah. And then I played Shadwin, which was terrible. Stealth escort game.
I heard about that.
Yeah. In those two, this has more of a Trine-ish feel. Especially in that you are playing three characters, but you control one at a time. So Has Been Heroes is a lane brawler. The most recognizable kind of similar game I can think of is something like Plants vs. Zombies, where your characters are all on the left and enemies come in from the right, basically you just have to clear them out before they get to the left side. There are many games like that, but Plants vs. Zombies is kind of like a big one. But, we have here, Has Been Heroes is, it focuses on these quote unquote has been heroes, right? They used to be, always called upon by the kingdom to destroy dragons and spiders and whatever, and now they're old. But the weird thing is the game doesn't really lean into that. I mean, the character designs look kind of old, but like the warrior is still super, super strong, and like they all fit their roles perfectly. So
he doesn't look like Sly Stallone, Sylvester Stallone, because he looks fucking old now.
No, I mean, they certainly look like past their prime, but in the game itself, they're perfectly capable. So you have three types of characters. As you complete the game, you can unlock more, you can have one of each type in your party. So you have, the strong fighter type, you have the mage, or the first one you start with is actually a monk, but, the magic type, and then the rogue. The way it works is, it's a complete rogue-like system in that everything is procedurally generated. The battles are exceptionally difficult. There is permadeath, and that applies to your entire party. So if anybody in your party dies, it's game over.
Wow.
And it leans more towards the comical side. So, again, these are has-been heroes. They're not at their prime anymore. So instead of doing these grand missions, you are escorting two princesses to school.
yeah. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's cute. But the problem is, like, I don't know, like, it presents everything through, like, cheesy animations, which, you know, doesn't really fit really well, and then the rest is like terrible one-liners that you get after like each combat or something like that. Anyway, so when you're going through, the maps kind of remind me of it kind of looks like an overworld of a game like Shovel Knight. Or maybe like the map system from Darkest Dungeon, something like that. You have to select which direction you're going to go, press the R button, and you'll start heading over there. And when you get there, something happens. Like, there could be a merchant or a lucky chest or something like that. Most often, it will be a battle. And in the battle, you have three lanes, one for each of your characters. The enemies will start pouring in from the right side. And that's completely random as well, so you could just get, like, nothing in the first two lanes, and then four characters stumbling down the third. Each enemy has, like, stamina, and the stamina are, like, these green blocks, and you have to drain their stamina before you can even damage them. So the stamina is like them blocking your attack, right? So if there's the melee fighter hits for one, the monk hits twice, and the rogue hits three times. Now the melee fighter, he hits once, but he's got the strongest attack. The mage hits twice, but even if he hits, it's, like, super weak. So you really just want him to drain their stamina. Anyway, so if you get their stamina down to zero, then they're stunned, and the next hit will actually hurt them, as well as knock them back and take off 1 point of stamina permanently.
Interesting.
There's a lot of, like, different calculations you have to do. For example, let's say you've got somebody with four stamina blocks. If you send your rogue, that'll hit three times, one stamina block left. Then if you send your mage, that'll hit one, two, it'll drain the stamina and then hit once more, take like super little health, because again, the mage is the weakest, and then knock them back, and now he's got three stamina blocks. The thing is, when you attack, like, your man kind of just, like, charges out and hits them. And then the game immediately pauses, to allow you to switch, because now that lane is open. That spot is open. That's where I was saying, like, you switch in your mage for your rogue. And then you can let the mage attack, do a follow-up attack. Or if you just want to stun the creature and allow for, like, a heavier damage hitter later, you can have the melee fighter go in there, hit that last stamina block, he's stunned for a good proportion of time, and then just don't switch out your melee fighter, let him build up another attack.
Interesting.
It sounds interesting on paper. I'm not even sure if I'm describing it all that well, but it sounds interesting, but like when you're actually playing, like it can be very, very confusing. And I've been playing for at least 5 hours now, and even still, like, I'm having trouble like figuring out, okay, I need this guy to get up here, and like, wait, oh, I put the wrong guy there, and then it gets kind of muddied because you also have like magic spells you can activate, and the magic and the melee all have countdown timers, and then again you've got a big problem comes in that it's a roguelike. And, you know, roguelikes are fine, I guess, but sometimes you'll get, like, 6-7 dudes in one lane, and it's almost impossible to kill all of them, or even, like, keep them knocked back enough that they won't hit any of your characters. Hmm. And your characters have, like, 1 or 2 stamina. So if you get hit, you know, you're gonna lose some health.
Well, they are old.
That's true. That's true. Except for the rogue. The rogue is, like, a kid who...
Well, he's a kid.
Yeah. You know, he heard stories of you, and he wants to join your party, so... Yep. Then, you keep going through the map, and you eventually reach a boss. You fight the boss, and you go on to the next area, and then you fight the main boss, and you win the game. Now, when you win the game, you unlock new regions and new characters and new equipment, new spells, all kinds of different things. And then you start it all over again.
Okay, now my question is, who is the boss of escorting two princesses to school? Who is the boss of that? The principal?
No.
The school bully?
No, I mean, that's just a total, like, it doesn't lead anywhere. It's just some ancient evil came out and started spawning enemies from the void.
Ancient evil harassing two princesses on their way to school.
Well, it's not that he's harassing the princesses, he's just, it's just that the land is evil.
He just happens to be there.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Now I will say, like, one problem is, along with the difficulty, like, I died, like, 3 times before I could even get to the first boss. Which, I mean, I guess it's not that bad, really, but the battles do take quite a while. Like, they can take, like, 3, 4, 5 minutes. And then, yeah, you're like, okay, I did really well. And then, oh, one character died. And, okay, start all over. There's very little enemy variety. At least to start. Like I said, I'm about 5 hours in, but 80% of the enemies are just a variation of skeleton. Like, sometimes they have a bandana or a silly hat. Some of them have shields and some of them have swords. But, I mean, they're all skeletons. And
Is it exactly the same sprite, just dressed up differently?
Most of them are.
Wow.
With maybe some different sizes. Some are bigger and smaller. But
wow.
Yeah. Yep. So that's that. And then I'll talk about one more before you talk about your 3/8 of a game. I don't know.
Go for it.
We have, let's see, R. R is for Rain World. Rain World, I've been interested in this game for quite a long time, mostly because I'm a sucker for a good animated GIF. I like all the GIFs I've seen of Rain World because it's a game where you play a tiny little slug cat, which combines the cuteness of a slug with the grossness of a cat. Possibly backwards. Well, I'm sure there's some subset of people out there who would agree with that assessment, but
I'm sure somewhere.
Yeah. So, it's actually a cute little cat, but, he has like the sluggish properties. Like, he can basically roll into like the tiniest little ball and squeeze into these pipes, which is kind of important. So, the story is again super simple. You're a slug cat with your slug cat family, and you're out one day, but then it starts raining, and you're like, oh, we gotta go home, but then you fell down a hole, and now you've gotta get back to your family. This is a kind of, like, post-human apocalyptic world, but, like, industrial kind of setting, so you're in a city, but it's overgrown, and it's all pixel art, and it looks amazing. It looks really nice, and the developers did a lot of work on, like, the natural aspects. So, like I said, nature has overrun everything. There are all kinds of hazards out there, and every single thing in the world wants to eat you. And you are a slug cat, which is not even a house cat. You are not big enough to fight these things. So, basically the only thing you can defeat are little bats that fly around and flowers.
Flowers? You defeat flowers?
Well, you pick them up out of the ground. Haha, take that flower. Didn't expect that, did
flower
you?
Flower defeated.
That's right. You can grab bats from the air, but they do kind of flit around. Like I said, they kind of, you know, react like you would imagine a bat would. As soon as you start climbing a pole that is near them, they'll start, like, drifting away. And they're kind of hard to catch sometimes. But anyway, you have to eat all these things because, you have, like, a little hunger meter at the bottom of the screen. And you have to have, 4 out of 7 of your little hunger pockets, filled, in order to hibernate. And hibernating is kind of important because there's also a timer that ticks down, and I think it's like 15 to 20 minutes. And if that timer runs down completely, the rain will come, and the rain will wash away everything. So, you have to find shelter. In some ways, I really like this aspect, and in other ways, I don't. So you find shelter. It's these tiny, tiny little corners that, like, when you get in them, this mechanical process begins where it's kind of like a vault door sealing up, and it's actually kind of creepy. And, you know, it's a reminder of the industrial age that was still around before the humans all kind of disappeared. And those aspects are really cool. What I don't like about the shelters is this is a game about exploration. You are going so far away from these shelters in order to find, like, things that you need. And the map is huge. Just the first area alone, there were more than, like, 20, 30 rooms. And I was getting lost. I was constantly depending on the map. But the problem is, like, you know, it's like, hey, go out and explore, but don't go out too far, because you never know when you're going to find another shelter. So, sometimes, yeah, like, I would explore, and then I'd be like, holy shit, I have to get back to the shelter, because, this game is not kind to you after you die. If you die, you lose all of your progress. Like, everything you did on the map is just gone. And it's like, hey, start over from scratch. Enjoy.
Wow.
Yeah. So, that's not very nice. And what really kind of contributes to that feeling is, like I said before, everything wants to kill you. And there are, I love the biodiversity. Like, there are, like, these lizards that go around. There's different colors, and different colors mean they can do different things. Like, the blue lizards can actually, like, crawl on the background of the screen.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, and the green lizards, those are the most basic ones. They can only crawl on the ground. The pink ones can actually climb sticks to chase you down and everything like that. And they actually do have, like, some of their natural, like, aspects. Like, if a pink lizard and a green lizard kind of meet, they'll actually start fighting. If they don't see you, they'll start fighting, and, like, their fighting gets so intense, like, it shakes the screen and everything.
Wow.
And, you know, they'll even kill each other and stuff like that. But the problem is, like, you really can't kill them. They have really hard heads, and you can pick up rocks and sticks and throw it at them, and it kind of stuns them for a moment, but you can't really kill them. Every creature kills you in, like, one snap of its teeth. So there were a couple of occasions where, like, I was running away from a pink lizard, for example. This is in our quick vid. And it went up high, and I kind of jumped off, and I was like, okay, I have a little bit of breathing room. It kind of tumbled down on top of me and then just immediately snapped my neck. Yeah. And then another big problem is that the game's own mechanics kind of work against you, because you're a slug cat, which, I mean... Yeah, slug kind of implies that you're slow, and you are really slow, but, like, there's just, it's hard to describe. Like, some of the movement is just off, it's really squishy movement, your jump.
So what do you do? Do you jump, run?
Yeah, you jump, you walk, you can crawl, you go into these, the most important thing is, like, you go into little pipes and crevices, that allow you to crawl up and around and things like that. And the pipes are also, like, your access to other rooms. But the problem is, like, I don't know why the developers chose to do this, but in several occasions, like, there's a pipe that will lead into the next room, and sometimes it's very crucial that you get into those pipes because you're being chased by, you know, lizards. And they can also crawl through those pipes, so that's not always, like, the safe, you know, it doesn't mean you're safe. But, but anyway, you need to get into that pipe quickly, but the problem is, the developers sometimes made, like, 3, 4, even, like, 5 pipes just all, like, stacked up together. And only one will go to the next room. And it's clearly marked. It'll have an arrow, and it's got, like, a white line. But the problem is, like, the jumping and getting into the pipe are so finicky that sometimes you'll wind up in, like, the pipe above or the pipe below. And then the lizard will reach in and snap your neck. And yeah, that's not quite so fun. Now, I mean, it's really weird. I was dying a lot and I was actually getting really frustrated, but at the same time, like, every time I died, like, I was learning something new about, like, the life, on the planet. And that's what was really awesome. Like, again, in our quick vid, like, there's this giant flying creature that came down and killed one of the lizards and then basically, like, co-opted its body. It had, like, this swinging, appendage, and the lizard became, like, part of the bird. Like, it would swing the appendage towards me and then, like, snap the lizard's jaws at me.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, it was weird and creepy as hell, and, oh, man. It's a grotesquely beautiful game at points, but frustrating as hell at others. And now it's your turn.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like the game that I played. Beautiful but frustrating. I just played the latest DLC for Dark Souls 3, which will be the last Dark Souls related content ever produced, if From Software is to be believed. This one is called The Ringed City. Supposedly it deals with the place in the Dark Souls universe where everything ends up at the end of the Age of Fire, which is called the Ring City, I suppose. Now, I don't really want to get into it too much because we may at some point be doing a spoiler cast on this.
Sure we will.
Yeah, we may. We didn't go in for the first DLC, but I think this one may end up in there. So I don't really want to talk about the story or plot line or puzzles too much. But it's really quite good. The atmosphere is really quite good. One of the first big things you see is this sort of, like, I know you're walking towards a corner and you hear this just like this nasty sound, and you're like, oh, what the fuck, because that's what you do in Dark Souls. You hear a nasty sound and you start looking around, and so you look around the corner and I see this big, like, skeletal, like, angel thing just floating in the air. And I kind of figure that's bad, so I didn't like just immediately, like, run towards it or see what it's going to do, because it really, really looked like it would kill you.
Angels always look like they'll kill you.
Yeah, like, but, like, just, like, it was floating out in the middle, like, over, like, this abyss, and there was like a walkway around the side, and it just didn't seem like something I wanted to let see me. But it actually had like, if you were looking around the walkway, you could see like some things you could hide behind. So I sort of did that, and then walked around, and it didn't get to see me. And then you find another one later on, and I sort of did the same thing. And then like you see a couple of the little thralls, those little crawly guys with the swords that are too big for them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the angel, apparently it hates everything, and it started shooting at those guys, just like killing them. So yeah, I found like three or four of those angels so far, and man, they are a pain in the ass. I got to the first boss, which was like Demon Princes. I can't remember exactly what it was called.
Don't say anymore. Yeah.
But it was really good. It was really good. It was like three-stage? I think it was like a three-stage boss fight.
You're already saying too much for some people.
Sorry. I mean, I guess it depends on how you define stages. But it was really, really good, really well done. Reminded me very much of a boss fight from a previous Dark Souls game that brought back memories in a good way. Won't say which one, but it was really good.
Well, I mean, yeah. If this is like where everything ends up, that sounds like it could kind of be expected at a point.
Yeah, and it quite blatantly references locations from other Dark Souls games as well, like 1 and 2. Like it's like has names of like places that you've been to. So yeah, it's really quite good. There's a bit too much poison swamp for me, but I guess that's sort of what Dark Souls does.
That's right.
So yeah, no, it's really good. Hopefully I'll get to the next boss and you will play it, and then we can do a spoiler cast on it.
Sure. All right. So I'll continue with my difficult games. So the next game I played is Snake Pass. So Snake Pass is another game, kind of like Has-Been Heroes. I noticed it was coming out for the Switch, and my Switch library is abysmal. So I was going to get this game either for PS4 or Switch, and so I decided to get it for the Nintendo console.
Yeah, why not?
Yep. Yeah. So Snake Pass is a game by Sumo Digital. Sumo Digital does just all kinds of things. Like Forza and this is a real tribute to kind of Rare, that's Rare the company, Rare character platformers, but at the same time it's a platformer, but it is not a jumping platformer, which is kind of where it's trying to divert. And
that's kind of odd. Like, how can you have a platformer that doesn't have platforms?
Right. Well, I mean, it does have platforms. Snake Pass, you play Noodle, the snake, as well as Doodle, the hummingbird. So Noodle and Doodle. Mm-hmm. All of what you'll be doing is with Noodle himself. So Noodle is tasked, is tasked with, going around each stage and collecting these three colored keys that will basically unlock the gate to the next stage. And as well as doing that, like, there are these little bubbles that you can eat, and there are coins to collect. Now, at first, I thought, like, collecting all the bubbles would be necessary, along with the keys, to kind of unlock the gate. But no. So, I don't know what unlocking all the bubbles does on each stage. I've only done it on, like, one. You control Noodle, controlling Noodle in Snake Pass is a lot different than controlling any of those character platformers or the characters from those games. You can't just go forward and jump. Noodle can move forward, but he actually has to move more like an actual snake would. And snakes can't just go straight forward. And that's just a biology note there. But snakes require that left-right, like, coiling movement, because that's what gets their muscles, like, in the position where they can propel themselves forward.
Right, right.
So in that way, you have to do the exact same thing. Like, if you want to go forward, you can move forward super slowly if you just go straight. But if you really want speed, you're going to have to, like, shift left and right and left and right. You have to actually slither, which is, it's kind of interesting. So, again, you can't jump, but Noodle is capable of climbing things by coiling around them. So this is a very physics-heavy game as well, so you can't simply slide yourself up a pole because you are a big, heavy snake, and if you start trying to do that, you're too heavy, and your body will just fall right back to the ground. So in order to climb a lot of, like, these structures, you have to find a pole that kind of has different ledges on it, and slowly kind of work your way around, or quickly. I'm just terrible at it, so you have to work your way around. You also have to put, like, a grip on it. So there's a special button to grip, like, a pole tightly. Because if you don't do that, then your body kind of flops, and if you've got too much of your body hanging over the edge or something like that, then you'll be basically pulled back down to the ground. That happens quite a lot. So you gotta use that grip button. But you also have to use a button, you have to pay special attention to your head. So your left stick doesn't actually move you, your left stick moves your head. It kind of aims your head. And then another button you push to actually move forward. And then another button is used to raise your head. Because, you know, it takes a lot of work for a snake to actually raise its head. You have to, let's say, for example, you're climbing up a ladder.
Right. Okay.
Just a very simple structure. So what you're going to want to do is you need to raise your head, put your head through, like, the first and second rung, and then coil your head around. So you got to use that left stick to coil your head. Move forward and keep, like, raising your head so your head keeps, like, pointing up, as you go up and up and up, while still holding on to the L2 button, because that's your, that's your grip, right? You can do things like, if you forget to, go around, like, a certain rung, you might overextend your neck. And again, this is a physics heavy game. So if you overextend, your entire body will follow after your head. So it's actually incredibly difficult to get where you want to go. Now, some of your back weight can actually be carried by Doodle with another press of a button. But this one's like a toggle. You don't have to hold it like the others.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's four buttons.
Yeah. To climb, like, a ladder structure, yeah, I was holding L2 and R2, moving the left circle, left stick, and occasionally pressing A to, like, raise the head. it's an effort. And, eventually it kind of becomes second nature. But the problem is, like, I really got good at climbing those kind of ladders, but my problem came when I had to climb, or not climb, but, kind of traverse just long poles, long horizontal poles, because you can do it, but again, you have to, like, really be careful about, like, your body distribution, and you have to hold on to that, you know, the grip button really tightly. Cause if, like, more than half of your body is down below the pole instead of, like, on top, coiled properly, then you'll fall.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's interesting on paper, but again, there were just so many areas that required me to go extremely high and then do one of those horizontal pulls, and I just could not do it very well.
Okay, so now are you this like real snake where if you fall off you just splatter and die? Or like what happens when you fall?
No. I mean, there's no, as far as I know, there's no fall damage. You can't drown. You're a floating snake. The only thing that will kill you is each of these worlds is on like its own floating island. So, some of the bubbles and some of the, like the extra coins you can collect are on ledges or, various bridges that extend beyond like the main area, and they're pretty difficult, and there's a lot of varying types of poles that you have to pass there, and if you mess up then you fall off the edge of the world, and there are little checkpoint markers that you can come across, and if you touch those, it kind of saves your progress up to that point in that stage. So if you're going for one of the tricky things, then you'll want to get all the easy things first, then touch one of those pads and try for the tricky thing. I managed to get like a few coins and stuff like that. Those are the harder items to collect. I got through like four stages, but yeah, those horizontal pulls were really what killed me mostly.
Horizontal pulls were what killed me.
That's right.
Famous last words.
Famous last words, right. So that's Snake Pass. And, you know, thinking back to it, that was probably like the most infuriating because like, you just get no sense of progress whatsoever if you get that far and then fall down and nothing happens. Yeah,
I guess at least in Rain World you see some cool rain effects.
That's right. Yeah, and some disturbing creatures. So the last game I'm going to talk about is Mass Effect.
I did like the original trilogy.
Yeah, I was
the ending was crap, but the first three games were good.
I was about to say I'm not sure that is justified, but I will say I just didn't care about the ending for Mass Effect 3. It worked for me, which is fine. It wasn't amazing, but neither was it like, oh my god, I can't believe this epic ended in this shit. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's how I feel about it, but then like the whole thing was epic, and then for the ending like, to be like, meh. It was just kind of like, ugh. It was a letdown.
But, so last week we talked a little bit about this, but I only played like 2 hours. I hadn't even gone to my first world, or the first world that I get to choose.
But it was on your starter planet.
Yeah. So, this time I got to go to Eos and Vold and Havarl and do a little bit of space exploration and see all these different things. And I got to see like, new alien races, which was nice. But it also kind of highlighted one of my problems with the game is that, it kind of is the same. This is Mass Effect Andromeda. You have this Andromeda project where you're leaving in the middle of Mass Effect 2. You do like a 600-year cryo sleep, and you come to this brand new galaxy, and 95% of the people you see, are just the old races from the Milky Way.
What? Like, are they the people that you brought with you?
Yeah, they're the people you brought with you. And I mean, yes, it makes sense in context, but, the very first race you see in this game, the first, like, alien race is immediately hostile. They don't even talk to you. And it's like, I was kind of hoping for something a little bit different. And then it's like, oh, here are the Turians and Asari and Krogan. And it's like, it's even missing out on some of the more interesting races. I forget their names, but, the green, spy alien, Drask? No.
I can't remember.
Yeah, anyway, it was, I think it was like the Thrall or the Thrall. Anyway, yeah, those green spy aliens and the Hanar, which were like floaty spiritual kind of creatures. And then there were like the kind of like nude gorilla kind of things that didn't have emotions, so they had to say the emotion they were speaking in.
Yeah.
Those were really fun to watch. But yeah, none of those are there, because apparently you only brought the races that had enough people that they could spare, like 100,000 people, to go colonize a new galaxy. Yeah, even like your party, I mean, without saying like what this new race is or anything like that, like I did find a new race. I don't know if it's the only one, but I found a new race, and one person from that race joined my party, and then I got a trophy saying, well, you got all the squad members now. And it's like, oh, only one of my squad members is a new alien race. Like, that's just kind of disappointing. Like,
yeah.
It's like,
super disappointing.
Yeah. I've got like two humans, a Turian, a Krogan, and an Asari that can join my team, and this new alien. I'm like, okay. So, yeah, that was disappointing. And then like, it's really weird. Like, I want to like this game a lot. Like, I'm really interested in the idea of exploring an entirely new galaxy and trying to find a new home. So like the themes kind of really speak to me, because I mean, I guess some of it comes from the fact that, you know, I packed up and moved to a new country I had very little idea about, before coming here. But, but at the same time, like, a lot of this game kind of feels like not a PS4 game. Like, a lot of the textures look like they could just fit on a PS3, and it is glitchy as hell. Like, there are so many things that have, basically occurred, and it's like, if this were a, Bethesda game, people would be mocking them for this. And it's not even just like the facial animations. It's things like when I run through fire and, my character doesn't react to it until like 5 seconds later, or when I was invading a base and suddenly every enemy actually became invisible, like not cloaked by any kind of ability or anything like that. They were simply not there, but they were firing at me. Like, fortunately, I had hitboxes, so I could still, like, target them with my abilities. But, yeah, I was just seeing, like, lasers shoot at me from nothing. Then, like, at one point, I fell down a cliff, and I died, and it reset me in, like, a T-pose. You know, arms and legs spread. But, like, I was stuck in that pose. I could move, but, like, I was still stuck in that pose.
So you're just walking around like you're on the cross or something?
Yeah, kind of. I could aim and shoot, but, you know, my avatar wouldn't pull out a gun or anything. I was still just in that mode the entire time. That got really annoying. And then there's all kinds of things where, just voices won't appear. Like, you'll see subtitles, but nobody actually says anything.
Weren't they supposed to have recorded like a billion lines for this game?
Yeah, there's something like 1,200 speaking roles. And I will say, like, when people are talking, that can be just as annoying, because I entered a room on one of the planets, and three different people started conversations. And it's like, I can't track, like, they weren't talking to me, they were just having, like, you know, ambient conversation. But I like to hear those ambient conversations, and I couldn't understand a single one, because three people were talking about three different subjects. That got really annoying.
I can see that.
But, I mean, again, I do actually like the combat. And I like the leveling system.
How different is it from the originals?
So the leveling system itself is kind of the same. You get skill points that you can allot to. It's kind of like Mass Effect 3. So you have certain skills. You put 1 point, 2 points, 3 points, and then branches. So you can choose how you want to specialize that skill. But then it also has this thing called profiles. And if you put a certain amount of points in a different set of skills, you have combat, biotic, and engineering. If you put a certain amount of point in those different sets, you can unlock these different profiles, and the profiles add additional damage. Bonuses. Mm. So, let's say you put all of your points into biotic skills. You can unlock the adept profile, and the adept profile gives you extra biotic damage, recharges your biotic skills faster. Or you can put like half into biotics and half into combat, which gives you the vanguard. So it's kind of like your class, right? The classes that become profiles. So if you get the vanguard profile, you still get a little bit of extra biotic damage, but now you also get extra melee damage and extra shotgun damage because vanguards are supposed to be up close and personal. In a way, it's kind of like Dark Souls because your class doesn't really govern how you level up anymore or what kind of character you have by the end.
It sort of seems backwards, like your class is totally dependent on what you level up.
Exactly, right? Yeah. I started as Vanguard, and I guess that kind of gives you the first rank or something. Mm-hmm. It gives you a couple of points in certain skills, and that's about it. After that, the skills are completely up to you. I really like that system. It's just a shame that it's bogged down by other things. For example, planet scanning has now become extremely tedious.
Before it was you just push a button and scan the planet. And then you see, oh, there's a dot over there. Let's go find the dot. And then you shoot a probe at it, right?
Yeah. In Mass Effect 2, it was pretty annoying because, you had to, physically scan the planet and see, where the different minerals were.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's the one I remember because I had to do it so much. Okay, there's a dot over there. I'm going to aim at the dot. Did I hit the dot? I missed the dot. Damn it.
Yeah. And then in 3, that was kind of the more where you controlled the ship on a little mini map.
Right.
And you drove to the planet. Here, it's kind of a weird combination. So, to go from one planet to the next, you select it on the system map, but then instead of just going there, and then, letting you just scan it. It goes to your ship, and maybe your ship is on another planet. The camera will zoom over to where your ship would be. It doesn't actually show your ship. And then it goes boop, and it shows you basically, travel to the next planet. It's a loading screen, right? But then all it does is it shows you that planet, and there might not even be anything there. You can, activate scanner. Nothing. Great. Thank you for taking that 15 seconds for that full-on, animation to fly over here. You gotta do that for, every planet. And there's, 5 planets in the system. So, vroom, boop. Oh, there's nothing here. Vroom, boop. Oh, here we go. There's an anomaly on this planet. And then it becomes like Mass Effect 3, where you just find the anomaly, launch the probe, and there you go. You get it. But it's got that animation in between each one.
That seems like it would get tedious. There's not a setting to turn it off. They should have a setting to turn it off.
Absolutely, they should, but they don't. A lot of loading screens. I mean, this is just a Mass Effect trope anyway. A lot of the loading screens are hidden behind, animations like the ship taking off or flying or whatever.
But you also said last week that even just the menu system in Andromeda is just terrible.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then when you're on the planet, that's when, like, the Mass Effect 2 mining comes into play. Like, you drive around in your Nomad, which is admittedly a lot more versatile this time around. Well, not versatile, but useful. Because some areas are quite distant from other areas. So you'll need that. But, you'll hit mining areas where you'll need to access your mining computer, and then it becomes like that Mass Effect 2 graph thing. But even then, it kind of gets annoying because you have to physically drive your car, to, like, specific points to get the most resources. Hmm. And that means, like, if I was just slightly to the left, then this would be okay. But to get slightly to the left, you have to reverse and then turn left and then drive forward.
You can't, like, get out of your car? Is the mining equipment, like, hooked to the underside of your car?
It's, nope, like, you have to be in your car, and then it says, like, launch, not probe, but, like, a mining thing. I don't know, like.
So it's hooked to the underside of your car?
No, it hovers over your car, but well, it fires
a remote control.
It fires, like, a laser mining drill.
What? Just get out of the car. What? Jesus.
Yeah. 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 So there's a lot of gameplay issues that kind of bog it down. But I mean, if you kind of ignore those, I don't know how much they're really needed unless, like, you
So the game is good. Yeah. Except for actually playing it.
That's right.
Not good. Yeah. Ignore playing it, then it's good.
Yeah. 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 I mean, if all you do is go around and shoot baddies, then it's fine. Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. Like, the gameplay is terrible, but I'm still having fun with it. I guess the story is still hooking me in.
We'll see
how long it can keep doing that. That's basically all. Those are all our games. Wow. We've been talking for quite a while.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, we play a lot of games, so, or I did.
You play a lot of games.
Well, I'm on vacation, so, yeah.
Yeah, somehow vacation for me turns into less time for hobbies because it means my wife has more requests.
Yeah, well, you know, priorities. So,
yeah.
Next week we have the PlayStation Plus games are coming out. So that includes Drawn to Death and some other stuff. I forget.
Some other stuff. Yeah, we're just kidding.
I mean, you can really just write off most of those entries.
Well, PlayStation Plus is stuff that's already been out for a while usually anyways, right?
Well, Drawn to Death is brand new. But I will say Curses and Chaos is coming to PlayStation Vita and PS4. It's cross-buy. I think it's cross-save as well. That was a really good game. We reviewed that. I think one of the offerings is Invisibles, so stay away from that. Invisibles was a terrible series. Other games coming out. So like I said, Drawn to Death's coming out. Persona 5 is getting its Western release. It's been getting really good reviews. Definitely play it.
Got one from you.
Yep, it got my game of the year. Definitely play that. Do not sleep on that. It's an amazing game. Get it. Play it. Then we've got LEGO City Undercover, coming to everything. PC, PS4, Xbox One, Switch. Then we have Paradigm. I don't know what that game is, but it's Paradigm. Sounds like a point-and-click adventure. After that, on Friday, is Bulletstorm, the full clip edition. We talked about that. That's the one with John St. John coming back as Duke Nukem. Bulletstorm is great. Duke Nukem's not, so enjoy that. Other games. Air Conflicts Secret Wars Ultimate Edition. So,
okay. Yeah. Sure. Yep. Yeah.
Armageddon, Dex of Destiny. So that's obviously a card battling game. Blackwood Crossing, sounds like a walking simulator, a story driven first person adventure game. So, I don't say walking simulator pejoratively, just, that's what it seems to be. Mortal Blitz, not Mortal Kombat, Mortal Blitz.
Okay.
Not sure. No idea what this game is. All it, the cover art is just a woman, a big-breasted woman in some kind of, like, stealth outfit. And it says, "Become Yuhei X-Force and fight in the mission to thwart the evil plans of the Dominion's Teratoma Destruction Plan."
Teratoma? Wait a minute. That's kind of cancer, isn't it?
I don't know. Toma kind of sounds like cancer. But, next, part of the Play Collective, Parappa the Rapper Remastered.
Coming up. Oh, yeah.
Plutobi, the Dwarf Planet Tales.
What?
Plutobi, the Dwarf Planet Tales. Plutobi was kicked out of the planet list in 2006 and became a dwarf planet because he is so small and weak. So he decided to become a planet again by showing his power to other planets in the solar system.
So this is a game of Pluto going on a killing spree?
That's like, right.
Killing the other planets?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, you look at the cover art, it shows a super angry little planetoid, and then a lot of other planets kind of staring at it from a circle around it.
Okay.
Use Your Words, which is a party game for PS4. VR, which is a VR Safari. And that is everything. So if you are interested in games and reviews and videos and all that kind of thing, check out our content. Our main page is over at kaijupop.com, but you can also check out our stuff at YouTube at kaijupop or Twitter at kaijupop. And there's all kinds of stuff there. You can like and subscribe and join us and have a good discussion, and we'd really appreciate it. So thanks for that, guys. If you want to follow me personally, I am at Kyoshi Banzai.
And you can follow me at Gibsaurus.
And that's going to do it for episode 230 of the Kaiju Podcast. Thank you guys, as always, for listening, and have a good day.
Yep.
Goodbye.
Merry Christmas. Thank you.